4:07. Raj Taylor driving you home for the weekend. It is Friday. You made it through the week. And Derek doing a good job at master control this afternoon, keeping me out of trouble. And joining us now is Jennifer DePinto. Jennifer does polls for CBS News. And how's Jennifer this afternoon?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm just fine. Have we learned anything about people's feelings on the shutdown of the government?
Well, they are not happy. 72% of Americans disapprove of shutting down the government due to differences about the health care law. Most Democrats and independents disapprove of this action, but we see division among Republicans. 48% of Republicans approve of shutting down the government due to differences about the health care, while 49% disapprove. However, when you look at Tea Party supporters, 57% of them actually approve of shutting down the government due to differences about the Affordable Care Act.
Looking at the independents, being opposed to the shutdown is one thing, but who they think is responsible would be yet another question in that for that group. Did you get any information on that?
We did. Independents are more inclined to blame Republicans in Congress rather than the president and the Democrats for the government shutdown. Americans overall feel the same way. 44% blame the Republicans, while 35% blame President Obama and the Democrats. And it's interesting that those numbers have barely moved since before the shutdown, when we asked the question last week, who would you blame if the shutdown were to occur? And we saw virtually the same numbers.
Did that surprise you?
It actually did. I thought after a couple of days of the shutdown that maybe, you know, it would have moved in one way or the other. But it seems like people, at least at this point, are more likely to blame Republicans.
Now, was there anything interesting within the Democrats that you polled? Was there anything surprising with them, or are they just on Obama's side on this thing and life is what it is?
They mostly do side with their own party and the president on the issue of the government shutdown and the debt ceiling, et cetera. However, there were 36% of Democrats. We asked overall whether you think President Obama and the Democrats should compromise in order to reach an agreement. And a majority of Americans said yes. But when we looked at Democrats, as many as 36% said the Democrats and President Obama should stick to their positions on this, even if it means not coming to an agreement.
Hmm. How did independents come down on that issue?
On that one, they think they rather see both sides compromise by a large margin. 8 in 10 think of independents think the president and Democrats should compromise, and they feel the same way about Republicans.
Okay. Now let's look at the Republicans. Fairly evenly split in that. Did you see any nuance to that data that surprised you?
We saw, yes, they're split on the shutdown, on whether they should be shutting down the government due to the health care law. They're also split on what should be the priority for Congress right now. 46% of Republicans think the priority should be to get the government running again, while 47% think they should concentrate on trying to stop the health care law. They also think that any budget agreement should also include some cut of funding for the health care law. 52% of Republicans think that. But 4 in 10 think any agreement should be separate from health care funding.
Interesting. Did you see anything in the polling data that would give you a clue to how people think this will get resolved ultimately? How will we ratchet this back down to government as normal?
The one thing we did see is that people aren't extremely confident that it's going to end soon. We have a slim majority, 51%, who think There will be some agreement reached soon, but as many as 42% think that this is going to go on for a long time. Democrats are more optimistic than either independents or Republicans about this. So there is a sizable number of Americans who are concerned that this can go on for a long while.
Did any of your polling take a look at the budget ceiling, the next crisis in line here?
We did. More than half of Americans would like to see the debt, a raise in the debt ceiling offset by spending cuts. However, 77% think it's more acceptable to reach an agreement that they don't fully support rather than have the U.S. go into default on its debts. And in that case, we see agreement across the board. A majority of Republicans, Democrats, and independents would all rather see an agreement that they don't fully support rather than have the United States default.
Interesting. Do people think that will be resolved prior to the drop-dead date?
They're not especially optimistic, just as they were last week heading into the government shutdown. They were divided last week about whether an agreement would be reached. Same here this week. Americans are divided whether a debt ceiling agreement will be reached by the October 17th deadline. 47% think it will be reached, but 46% don't think so.
Mm-hmm. You are a cold, calculating professional and don't get emotionally involved in this. We've talked enough times, I know. But did you come away with any kind of sense for what's going on in the country based on the overall poll itself, everything together?
Well, we did see the percentage who think who are angry at Washington rise just over the last few months. So this really shows that people are, if they were fed up before, they're even more fed up now. Nearly 9 in 10 Americans are unhappy with the way things are going in Washington, and that's including 43% who are angry. That's up 13 points since March, and it's the highest we've seen since we began asking this question in 2010. And majorities across the political spectrum, Democrats, Republicans, independents, are all displeased with Washington.
Interesting. I appreciate your taking time out of your busy day to share with us. And you have a good weekend.
You too. Thank you.
Thanks, Jennifer. That's Jennifer DePinto. She is one of the people, along with Sarah Dutton, that do polling for CBS News. And it's always good to take a look at least at a snapshot of just exactly what's going on out there in the country. 80 degrees again. Let's stop by the WKZO.com newsroom. /419 at 590 WKZO. 80 degrees out there. Some showers over Lake Michigan heading in our direction. Doesn't look anything severe today. Not so tomorrow. And it certainly doesn't look anything like looking out over the Gulf of Mexico, where they're waiting for a hurricane, a near hurricane, or tropical depression to come ashore. And certainly none of the thunder snow they're having in Rapid City, South Dakota this afternoon. Well, after waging a noisy summer-long campaign to reduce food stamps and to make the rules eliminate people and reward work, Republicans have cut off funding to job training programs that go along with the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, That happened when the rest of the government shut down. Those employment and training programs, known as SNAP E&T, are being left to their own devices during the shutdown. That, according to a Department of Agriculture document, providing answers to questions from anti-hunger groups and program administrators that was obtained by Think Progress. The USDA does not expect any new fiscal 2014 funding will be available before the ETA, the E&T programs lapse. The document says repeatedly, like various other safety net programs, including ones that provide food assistance for pregnant women and infants, the amount of cash on hand to cover the loss of funding for these job programs varies state to state. SNAP E&T funds go to job training, GED classes, work search and placement programs, and other efforts to help food stamp recipients either find work or improve their job qualifications. While there's no certain cutoff date for SNAP E&T, the likelihood is if this lasts more than just a few more days, they'll have to shut down the job training programs. That, according to anti-hunger expert Joel Berg, it's so complex we really just don't know how much money is left nationally. Berg, who heads the New York Coalition Against Hunger and is a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress, said program administrators were caught unprepared for the shutdown. They thought adults were going to fix it. People didn't spend a lot of time preparing for something that seemed so insane that it was never going to happen. You don't spend a lot of time preparing for a UFO landing, he said. Right now, people are scrambling around the country at the state and local level to figure out where these programs will continue. The scrambling amounts to time and resources that should have been spent providing services, and it's costing taxpayers a lot of money. This is another example of how this is spending more money and using more bureaucracy. And we talked to a couple of organizations involved in feeding people this week. And we talked to Ann Lipsey, who is concerned that the women's and infants and children's feeding program will run out of money this coming week. I asked her how busy food pantries are in Ann Lipsey's case. One of our larger local pantries, Loaves and Fishes. And she said they're coming off 2 months, July and August, where they served record numbers of people, 11,000 people in Kalamazoo County are food insecure and received help from Loaves and Fishes in each of those 2 months. And now there is going to be a tsunami of new needy people as women who have young children no longer will be able to get any WIC benefits. And SNAP's future is in question. It's not exactly certain how much money the state has left to fund that program. So if the shutdown goes on long enough, what is going to be a fairly steep slope in increasing need for food in food banks could become tremendous if the SNAP program runs out of funding as the government shutdown wears on. And this also shows that the depiction by many conservatives that SNAP recipients are lazy dependents who prefer to live on the dole rather than work, that's a core component of the Summers Republican effort to impose significant cuts and eligibility changes on the food stamp program. About two-thirds of SNAP recipients are children, disabled, or the elderly. Yes, you heard me right. Two-thirds of the people receiving SNAP benefit are children, disabled, or the elderly. Among the remaining recipients who could reasonably be expected to work, nearly all find jobs within a year of being on the program. When House Republicans finally passed the food stamp bill, it included heightened work requirements that would undermine the program's flexibility to address spikes in hunger. It did not, however, provide any additional funds for SNAP E&T, and that's the effort to train people to get the jobs that would make the SNAP benefits unnecessary. So while we complain that there's too many people just living in the lap of luxury, living on the meager amount that SNAP provides on the dollar amount that it provides on a daily basis to feed themselves, and two-thirds of SNAP recipients are children, disabled, or the elderly. 590 WKZO time is 427. Taking a look at your weekend weather, clouds breaking for sun this afternoon, maybe a spotty shower or thunderstorm. Looks like that's going to happen if you go to the WKZO interactive radar. You can see some storms coming off the northern part of Illinois, northern suburbs of Chicago headed in our direction. Cloudy and warm tonight, a shower or thunderstorm around and a low of 64. Mostly cloudy, warm, and humid tomorrow. Some thunderstorms around, mainly later in the day. They can be strong with some damaging winds and torrential downpours and a high of 80. When we talked to Bob Larson, he said that if we get very much sun tomorrow, those storms could end up really rocking and rolling by the time they go through here tomorrow afternoon and evening. The showers continue on into Sunday morning. Otherwise, just a cloudy day, a whole bunch cooler, and 68 degrees. We've got 80 degrees in Kalamazoo. 590 WKZO time is 429. We've rounded third base and we're on the way to home. 22-4 at 590 WKZO. Weather forecast brought to you by Asthma Allergy Centers of Southwest Michigan. For the office nearest you, visit asthmaallergycenters.com. The WKZO.com AccuWeather forecast. Clouds breaking for sun sometimes this afternoon. A spotty shower or thunderstorm, humid and warmer, 82 the high. Cloudy and warm tonight, a shower or thunderstorm around and a low 64. Mostly cloudy, warm and humid tomorrow. Some thunderstorms. We may see some severe thunderstorms with damaging winds and torrential downpours as the day wears on tomorrow. Look for a high of 80. And that's exactly where we are right now on the west side of Kalamazoo. Joining us, a regular contributor and a longtime friend of mine, Rob Sisson. He's the president of Conserve America. How you doing, Rob?
Good, Roger. How are you today?
I'm fat and sassy. Well, first, let's talk a little about this being St. Francis Day and how that relates to the new Pope Francis. St. Francis was sort of the patron saint of environmentalists, if I'm correct.
He is the patron saint of environmentalists. And he, by the way, was recently joined by St. Kateri Tekakwitha in the Catholic Church as a second patron saint. But today is the feast day of St. Francis in the Catholic and other churches.
And he shares a name with Pope Francis. Is that where the similarities end?
No, actually, the week after Pope Francis was selected in the conclave, he said in an audience, you know, people have wondered why I chose the name St. Francis, and it's because of St. Francis's concern for the poor and also because of his concern for creation. And the Pope added on something that we've not been paying attention to lately, have we?
Mm-hmm.
So it was a very deliberate selection of that name by the Pope.
Okay. What's your initial impression of the Pope? From an environmentalist perspective, you are, after all, the president of Conserve America.
Right. Oh, I think it's fantastic. I think almost on a weekly basis, he makes comments about creation care, climate change, and other issues, you know, particularly in regard to how it's impacting the poor around the globe.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thrilled with his pontificate so far and look forward to more of his conversation. You know, it's kind of odd, Roger. I will take arrows from conservatives from time to time who think I'm not a conservative because of my positions on environmental protection and climate change.
Mm-hmm.
The absolute worst time I ever took a beating was I did an interview for CatholicOnline.org, which is kind of a big Catholic digital news post on the web.
Sure.
After that interview appeared, I had fellow Catholics from around the country taking issue with my position in some rather unholy terms.
Well, there have been people, I know you'll find this hard to believe, that would be critical of my perspective on things. I know that's a stretch, but there are people.
No, it can't be.
Yeah, I know, but trust me, there are people out there who disagree. Changing the subject, Jim McKinney, a former associate here in the afternoon in the trifecta, did a great interview this morning with a PhD from the university, and they talked about the potential mining for potash in the northern part of the Lower Peninsula. And in some information that you sent me, it's an area of about 20 square miles spread across the two counties. Now, the mining is done by, they think, as many as 300 wells, some of which will be pumping water down into this potash salt deposit, and where it will dissolve the salt, and then that is pumped out, the water is evaporated, and left with the potash that farmers apply to their fields. Do you have any alarm bells? Do you know anything about potash mining? Is this going to consume millions of gallons of water. Now, it apparently they don't let it just run into streams, because that's where the money comes from, is letting the water evaporate and leaving the potash behind. And so it doesn't seem that there's likelihood of a lot of runoff going into streams. But do you know anything about potash mining?
You know, I know very little other than what you just described in some of the research I did quickly this afternoon. You know, the sulfide mine in the Upper Peninsula is still undergoing challenges from environmental groups, and it's been years and years. Their permitting's been years and years in the process. So I would expect this would have to undergo permitting and review as well, and an environmental impact statement done. I don't know how much water, but I know that those counties where this is located at, I think Osceola and Montcalm counties, mm-hmm. if I recall correctly.
Yeah.
You know, that's where the water bottling plants are located. And so the citizens up there are acutely aware of extracting water and use of water that then leaves their locale. So I'm going to count on the citizens up there being good watchdogs and making sure that their water resources are protected for multiple purposes.
Yeah, because this is the water is going to leave. It will leave as water vapor as they dry the solution that's pumped up from underground to get the potash left.
It'll end up being rain in Ontario someplace.
Yeah. But that certainly is water that's going to be leaving the Great Lakes watershed. And that's a concern for me as well. This will be interesting. This could be a significant boon to Michigan's economy if it can be done correctly. And
yeah, I think one of the statistics I saw was they predict there's $65 billion worth of potash
mm-hmm.
in the deposit, and I think they said that's nearly triple the value of the oil and gas that's been taken out of Michigan.
Yeah,
thus far. So yeah, that, comparatively speaking, it could be a huge economic boon.
Yeah. And it may actually make life easier for our farmers since potash is not being transported from remote parts of the world to come here to be spread on our fields. It could be hauled just downstate. And so hopefully that would give farmers a little larger margin.
Well, I hope also that the farm industry and farm lobby draws a parallel comparison, because right now we bring potash in from New Mexico and Canada,
mm-hmm.
and I think the cost of transportation is between $30 and $60 a ton, which would be reduced to a very minimal level here with our own deposits. Same thing goes for coal, Roger. We pay to transport every lump of coal into the state to burn for electricity.
Billions of dollars of coal.
So the extent that we can move to renewable sources here in the state would also save that kind of money for consumers and industry.
Yeah. And leave some of the money here. That's why you and I are both proponents of renewable energy, is that the billions of dollars that we're sending out of state to buy coal would stay here.
That's right.
And help people who live here make a living and pay taxes. But we go crazy now and again, you and I. Before I let you go, Rob, a quick question. I talked earlier about this afternoon. You have a connection to the West, and for the life of me, I can't remember if it's Wyoming or Montana. Montana has just issued 66,000 permits if every one of the permits kills the five wolves they're allowed to, would kill 30,000 wolves, but there's only a population of 625 wolves in the state. How do things like this happen? Do you have any insight into the mindset that would issue permits that would allow the killing of 30,000 wolves when there's only a population of 625?
Well, I saw that, and I tried to find some information, and I hope it's like some other game or other wildlife management practices where the, like in Michigan, if someone harvests a bobcat, it has to be reported within a certain number of times so that we can keep track of the quota.
Mm-hmm.
And I would hope that's what's going on in Montana, is that you have to tag and take the wolf carcass to some, you know, central regional spot to have recorded, so they can track the harvest to make sure that they still abide by the court orders that remove the wolf from the Endangered Species Act. And I did see another report this week too, Roger, that there was some legal review going on right now, that there was some bad information used by the anti-wolf lobby out west to get them removed from the Endangered Species Act too early. So we'll see how that comes out.
Interesting. What are your thoughts from a Conserve America position on the wolf hunt in Michigan?
I have, you know, I personally and our organization loves the fact that wolves exist again in the wild.
Mm-hmm.
I have heard stories from people I know downstate here that have connections in the western UP where wolves have done some significant damage to livestock operations up there.
Mm-hmm.
That have been there, you know, for a long time. It's not like out west where we're, you know, some ranchers grazing cattle in an area where grizzlies and wolves frequent. So I know that there is a need to call the number of wolves in the UP. I still hope we maintain a sustainable number of wolves in the wild, because there are three things that really make me feel alive. One is hearing an elk bugle. Another, seeing a grizzly in the wild. The other one's hearing a wolf howl.
Mm-hmm.
And I think We're much less as a people when we don't have them out there in the wild as part of our ecosystem.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a sense of where the majority of your membership is on wolf hunting?
We have a very active membership in the Southwest that is working very hard to conserve the Mexican gray wolf population in New Mexico and Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And we've actually developed and working with some other groups on like wolf friendly livestock operations.
Okay.
And it's really a growing trend from Montana down to the Mexico border, with ranchers trying to do some different things so that the interaction with wolves is mitigated or minimized. And, the wolves in the livestock operations can coexist.
It seems there has to be a way to work it out. And I'm not anti-hunting. I wish hunters were a little more effective in managing the deer herd in our part of the country.
Right.
There's too many deer out there. We kill them with cars. If we have bad winters, there'll be some issues with starvation. And I'm not opposed to hunting, but when you see a state issuing 6,000 permits, each permit is allowed to take 5 wolves, and so the culling of 30,000 wolves theoretically possible when there's a population of only 625 in the state, one wonders if they're using any science at all to create and manage the wolf pack.
Yeah.
In that state.
Well, I know there are a lot of eyeballs on the situation from both sides, so I don't expect it to get out of hand, and I think the issuing of that vast number of permits probably has more to do with
making money.
You know, some of the conservative types out there saying, you know, we've had it, we're gonna show you. When in actuality, in practice, it's, you know, it's nowhere near that number. I mean, you know, I forgot what the goal is for Montana, but it's still a very large population. And I'll try to do some more homework on that for you, or actually connect you to some friends out there that could speak more intelligently about it.
Cool. Cool. Well, always good talking with you, Rob. Before I let you go, let people know first, that there are conservatives who have an environmental orientation and that your group represents them. And how could people learn more about Conserve America?
They can go to conserveamerica.org on the web or find us on Facebook. And if they're interested in St. Francis today, they can go to catholicclimatecovenant.org and find more information there.
Thanks, Rob. Always good talking with you.
You too, Roger.
Have a good weekend.
Bye-bye.
Rob Sisson, president of Conserve America. 590 WKZO time is 4:55. We got 80 degrees in Kalamazoo. Let's get an update of local news from the WKZO.com newsroom. Well, that's going to do it for the afternoon show. We made it to Friday. Whew. Seemed like a long week. The government shut down, the shooting yesterday. I'm ready for a breather. I don't know about you. 79 degrees on the outside. I'll talk to you again tomorrow morning at 6 a.m., and then I'll talk to you in Birdwatch.
Kalamazoo's news, weather, and traffic station.
This is WKZO Kalamazoo. 5 o'clock.